Welcome. Well, thank you, Capacity Crowds. Welcome along to this week's edition of Life's a Pitch TV. They're a wild lot tonight. They really are. Oh, my goodness. Welcome along to the show, brought to you in association with our main sponsor, DPS Tech. And a massive shout out to our other sponsors, All About Hearing, marketing company Ginger Pickle, Forward Floors, Come Hither Design, The Hudson Group, Sound 4 Pro Audio, Venue 16, Fred Olsen Logistics, John Keeble Cars in Bramford, and now The Dove in Ipswich, helping us keep going. The show that was described this week by one of our viewers as the show that is as comforting as a hot sausage roll on a cold winter's day. Thank you, Baba Gavin, for that. Let me introduce you to the team. Terry Butcher's here. Yay! Russell Osmond's here. Yay! Phil Ham's over there from twtd.co.uk. We've got Richard on technicals. Thanks to John, to Mark. Leslie's our floor manager as well. And a Capacity Crowd, thank you very much. I'll tell you what, boys, I'm not going to keep him waiting any longer. We are absolutely thrilled. My dear friend The Beat called him his Special K every time he came on the radio show. Give a big, massive Life's a Pitch TV round of applause. It's only Kieran Dyer, everybody.
Kieran.
You don't tire of hearing that, do you?
It's, I was saying earlier, it's a better song than Kieran. It's quite a depressing song, though.
We were going to do that one later, weren't we? But never mind, we'll scrub that now. Great to see. How are you?
I'm alive, so that's a blessing. Still get very emotional and overwhelmed by the whole process that I went through. Just the burden of someone had to die for me to be alive is just amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to do everything in my power to make them proud up there. So I've been given a second chance. I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah, well, it's really good words, Kieran. Really good words.
He did. He's actually shown us his scar. And I thought I had a lot of scars and good scars, but he beats me by a mile. Wow, unbelievable. You know, what he went through was incredible.
I say to my youngest kid, who's 12, nearly 13, I say, it's a shark bite. And he actually believed it for a bit. I thought I'd been bitten by a shark. So
that's a good story, that one. It's a shark bite. It's a really good one. For those who don't know, I mean, just tell us what you've been through. When did you first realise that something was not right?
I was doing pre-season with Paul Cook and Chesterfield. We went to Portugal. Paul Cook's got a great way of getting the budget up for pre-season. So we're in Portugal. We're in a 5-star hotel. And obviously my eyes used to always go yellow. But that didn't scare me because I'm used to it. But then my ankles started to swell up, my legs started to swell up. I was thinking something's not quite right. We came back from Portugal, and one day in training, Gary Roberts, who was Paul Cook's assistant, I said to him, "You should see the size of my testicles." I swear they were like the size of that ball, both of them. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And because I still felt okay myself, it was just I was swelling up everywhere. And that evening, I woke up about 1 o'clock in the morning and I had a real shooting pain in the side of my stomach, and I thought, damn this. I was banned from driving, shock. So I just rung a taxi, and from Chesterfield I got a taxi straight to Addenbrookes hospital. Didn't let anyone know, didn't even notify my family, just went into the A&E, and then they admitted me into the hospital, and I was there for nearly 3 months. So,
Goodness.
They were saying that I need a liver as soon as possible because mine is basically packed in.
So this was a problem that went back some years.
Yeah.
Initially, you discovered this, 2002 or something like that, was it?
Yeah, well, I had a condition, an autoimmune condition of the liver in 2002. But then when I got diagnosed with PSC, which is a condition that you have your tubes, your bile ducts, they call it, and it scars. And when it scars, it means it closes, so the bile can't come out. That goes into your bloodstream, and that's when all the toxin and poison starts to happen. So, I got diagnosed with that in 2016. When I was working for Ipswich in 2019, there was the big story when I found out I needed a liver transplant. Again, I had a lot of jaundice, went to the A&E. They rushed me to Addenbrookes. And that's when they said I needed a transplant. They said I needed one within 3 to 6 months. It was 18 months later. I was still doing the 23s, feeling fit as hell. They said my bloods were, they had improved so much that there was no need to do the operation. So they suspended me on the list, and I was doing well. Like I said, I went and joined Paul Cook at Chesterfield just to be on the grass and coaching because I love it. And then that's when I had the problems in the summer.
You must have realised at that point then to get a taxi all the way from there to Cambridge. You knew, did you? At that
yeah,
point?
I knew. Something weren't right. I was scared. And for me to be scared, because I'm quite mentally strong, I knew something was right. And luckily I did go in that day. And yeah, it's tough for me to talk about the 3 months in hospital because I still get too emotional, so I won't go into too much depth, but yeah.
So was that 3 months waiting for one to become available?
The amount of false alarms you have where they think they've found you a liver, they have to have, obviously, they have a team that goes to retrieve the liver, whether that be by helicopters or cars, and they retrieve the liver, then they do all the testing on the liver. So there was one night they woke me up about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I waited 20 hours for the news. I kept saying to the nurse, have they retrieved it yet? They retrieved it yet? Because you're trying to get mentally prepared for a major operation that is life and death. You're trying to stay positive, but you've also got the scaredness in you. And then like 20 hours later, I just dozed off, and a surgeon comes and taps you on the shoulder and says, the liver's too fatty, or the liver's too big. And then you have to go through the process of waiting for another liver. So I had a few false alarms, which, again, adds to all the drama that you're going through.
I can remember talking to you after that incident.
Oh, yeah.
And, that was just the way you sounded. It was absolutely devastating, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely devastating. And also when you spoke to me is when I had no energy. The symptoms I had were... One of the symptoms you have is you can't stop scratching, and I'm literally clawing my skin to pieces. It was terrible. But one thing I will say, I was in hospital for 3 months, and it's an hour and a half from Ipswich to Addenbrookes. So it's a 3-hour trip, and I had family, friends and people. I must have had 4 to 5 people a day coming to visit me, and they see me at my worst, where I was ratty, I was snapping, I'd fall asleep on them. I'd take all my frustrations out on them. So I always used to think I was public enemy number one when I was playing, but this showed me how much love there is out there for me. And I'll always remember that.
There really is, Kieran, isn't there, everybody? There really is. Really, really is. Did you, in your darkest moments, did you think that you wouldn't get one?
No, I was always confident, because the way they do it is... You're in certain categories, and it's all determined by your blood. And by the time I went into hospital, I became a high priority. So literally, I was getting a liver, because within 6 months, I could have been, like you said, I could have passed away. So I always knew I was going to get one. It was just being in a hospital for 3 months, and it's just, like I said, I said in the statement about the staff. I used to moan about the NHS all the time when I'm waiting at the A&E for 4 hours, or can't get in a doctor's appointment because they've got me on hold and I'm 35th in the queue. But when it comes to life and death, they are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they
people.
Absolutely are.
And they saved my life.
Yeah, they absolutely are.
So how
are.
Did you find out about that you were going to get the liver that you finally got?
Yeah, again, so I think it was around the third time when they found me a liver. And this time it just felt different. I don't know why. I just felt this is the one. So they said they were going to retrieve it. Again, I got woken up really early in the morning, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And they stopped me eating straight away. So sometimes they know, they kind of get a sense of how long it's going to take to get the liver in. So you can eat a bit and then you have to cut up the cutoff point. And they stopped me from having breakfast straight away. And I was thinking, that's a good sign. And then the surgeon came in and he just said, I'm going to be seeing you in theatre in 2 hours. And I was like, wow, here it goes. And that was, I can remember it vividly when they were wheeling me down to the theatre and I had my wife and my mum there. I was just like, here we go. See you on the other side.
And how long was the operation?
The operation was nearly 10 hours. 10 hours. So it was a massive surgery. And the funny thing is obviously when they're operating on you, they're trying to get a new liver in and they're trying to save your life. So they're not very delicate in there. So when you wake up that first day, that was probably when I'd mentally quit. And when I woke up from surgery, I was just asking them to just let me go. Just, I can't do this. I couldn't go through that pain. It was, I don't want to hear any woman talking about childbirth is the most painful. Trust me, getting a new liver, I compare it to if there's a heaven and a hell and they say you live in paradise, but you burn for eternity. I was like, I was burning nonstop all over. And it was really tough for my mum and my missus to see, because they were there when I woke up from surgery. And obviously by that time I've got drips coming out of my nose, mouth, I've got drains coming out of my neck, two coming out of my stomach, coming out of my thing. And they're hearing me saying, I don't want to go on with my life anymore. It was so difficult for them that they had to leave the hospital where they actually see me broke. So the next day when they come back to the hospital, which is quite a funny story, is they're obviously really nervous coming to the room. And as they approach the room, they see me sitting up, cup of tea in my hand, flirting with all the nurses. So they're like, bloody hell, I don't know what drugs they give you in 24 hours, but yeah.
He's back again.
That's the human body for you. Once you get your mind right and the body, it's such a powerful weapon.
And it's been quite a recovery, hasn't it, as well? It's
I'm ahead of schedule. My blood's flying. I was on so many tablets to start off with, because obviously your liver always try to reject, because it's like a foreign object to the body. But my medication's coming down rapidly. I'm allowed to drive now, which is usually it takes 3 months. It's only been 2 months. They give me the permission to drive. I've been using the gym. I'm allowed to swim. So all signs is that my new liver's taken and I can start fulfilling my second life.
Well, you touched on that a while ago, a second life. And I've spoken to so many people over the years who've been given the gift of life, which you have. You so eloquently spoke about it earlier on, saying that you are eternally grateful for the person that donated the liver. You're going to make the most of that. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely life-changing, isn't it? It's like being born again, isn't it?
Of course. Like I said, like the best way I can say it, it's two ways I look at it, is that 99% of the whole world, you only get one chance to live. And I've been fortunate enough to get two chances, which I'm really blessed. And another, I could ask the question to these two. If you two were 44 years of age and I offered you 100 million, but I said to you, you die in 2 days' time, would you take the 100 million? Obviously, you wouldn't. You want to live.
Well, that's a tough one, that
so
one. Yeah.
What I've been given here is priceless. That's the best way. It's just a gift. And like I said, I'm going to make the most of it.
Well, we're thrilled to see you here. We really are, aren't we, everybody? Yeah. Absolutely thrilled to see you here. You've got a life and a half to talk about. We've got about an hour tonight, so we're going to rattle through it in a little while, but give you a chance to catch your breath a little bit, because I know it's been very emotional for you. So let's have a little look at the season so far, see what the boys make of the season so far. We've got West Brom at the weekend. This is sponsored by the Dove in Ipswich. So we've had an international break, Butch. You were sending various WhatsApp messages to our group about England. I shan't repeat what they were, but no, they weren't particularly complimentary.
Well, I don't know about you, but I was absolutely bored. Bored witless. I mean...
No, were you?
Yeah, but absolutely scandalous. I mean, poor Kieran, what Kieran's gone through. And if he watched those games, he'd want to go back into hospital, I tell you, after that. Wow.
Did you watch them, Kieran?
I didn't watch the second game. I was...
Kieran played with Southgate.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the national team. So he knows all about Gareth.
Yeah, just he's a, what's the word I can say?
Careful. Teammate.
If you're an introvert or an extrovert, he's definitely an introvert with the way his team plays football. We've got so many talented players. You want them to come off the leash and just let's go at teams. Some of the attacking players we've got are to die for, but he's been probably the most successful manager since Sir Ralph and Sir Bobby, so... It's a difficult one, but I would just like to see
More attacking flair, would
I'd just like to see everyone play. All the Fodens, the Grealishes, the Bellinghams. I'd get Sterling. I know Terry's not a big fan of Sterling, but he's playing better than Rashford, so...
Everybody's playing better than Rashford. I was going to charge him 20 quid because he was watching the game a lot of the time. No, but
what did you make of it, Russ?
What I would like Terry's opinion on Mr. Maguire's performance again.
Dreadful.
Thank you. Would you like to elaborate on that?
I thought it was dreadful. I mean, I would have actually given or made an appointment for Specsavers because he get passed into the opposition all the time. No, I just think first thing I would say is just be braver. Come on, you're braver than that. You should be braver than that. And you're playing for England. Yes, there's pressure, more pressure possibly than the club side, but that's what you thrive on. Go and play. Go and get the ball and turn. Be on the half turn. This passing around at the back. And I mean, Pickford had more touches than Harry Kane in the last game. Harry Kane hardly touched the ball. So that can't be the case. I know you to a possession-based football and switching from one side to the other and trying to get the extra man and the overloads and all blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. But for goodness sake, just get the ball forward, cross the ball and score. Simple as that.
Maybe I'll share your WhatsApps with the group. I don't know. Perhaps not. Perhaps no, not. There were quite a lot of Zeds at one point. Yeah, I'm going to bed.
I got those as well.
Yeah. We all got those.
I went to bed at halftime in both games.
What was it like, Kieran, when you got the call up for England? Talk us through that.
I got called up for England when I was still playing for Ipswich and, well, it was called the First Division then, the Championship, which is some honour that you're playing in the division below. And Glenn Hoddle was playing free at the back. He loved me as a wing back. He called me up into the squad. And you always have the doubts that I'm playing in the division below the Premier League. You look at all these, I think Gazza was in the squad. You've got Gazza, you've got Beckham, you've got Ahusu, Shearer, everyone.
Scholesy,
my favourite player, yeah, of course. So you think, you always question yourself, are you good enough? And after the first session, I was thinking, I'm better than a lot of these. I'm definitely going to be playing in the Premier League one day. That gave me the confidence. And I was going to make my debut. John Gorman was his assistant. They said, you're going to make your debut. And then as we met up for the squad, Glenn Hoddle gets sacked because he came out with the quote about the disabled children. So I never, Howard Wilkinson took over. He didn't put me on the bench, which was a blessing in disguise because that was the day when we lost 2-0 at Wembley to France and Zidane was on absolute fire and Anelka scored two. And I was thinking, wow, I couldn't get anywhere near Zidane that day. So it was probably a blessing in disguise. I didn't make my debut. And then, like you said, when I made the move to Newcastle, within five games of the season, you have the first international in September time, and Kevin Keegan called me in and gave me my debut. So I'll never forget it.
When you played for England, you played in a variety of positions, didn't you?
Yeah.
You played midfield, they call it midfield, left midfield, right midfield, attacking midfield, centre forward, right wing back and right back.
Yep.
It's versatile, but at the end of the day, you know, did that do you harm more than...
Yeah, I always said my favourite position was anywhere centrally, whether it be off a striker or centre midfield. And I think I only had one start in my favourite position. And when Kevin Keegan gave me the dreaded knock on the door before the Euro 2000s to tell me I wasn't in the squad, the first thing he said to me is, I don't know your best position, you're too versatile. So I'd been told...
Thank you.
I'd been told all the way up until that point that my versatility was a strength, a blessing in disguise, because I could play anywhere. But yeah, that went against me. But that's why I think I'm a decent coach, because I've played in all these positions, so I can relate to every player on the pitch.
Couldn't play centre half though, Terry, could he?
Well, no. I think he would have a go at it, put it that way. But you know, you look at Baresi and look
You've
at
You've seen
quite
me
a lot.
Playing centre half when I used to join him on the 23s.
Yeah, but they were never going to go past you, were they? Because they'd have to, you'd work them too hard afterwards. They were scared of you, Kieran. Let's be honest about it.
Let's get back to town and Phil, West Brom this coming weekend. It's nice to have some football back, isn't it? Yeah. We've missed it.
Yes, West Brom. We've not beaten them for a long time, actually. You were actually at the club when we last beat them at the Hawthorns.
That's when I played centre midfield. Finally got it right. Brian Hamilton was assistant manager, weren't he? And I was playing right back all season, and they decided to drop the captain, which was George Williams at the time, Geraint. and they put me centre midfield with Matt Holland, and yeah, we finally got a win.
And the rest is history. Yeah, yeah, we yeah, and Manu Tetti scored the goal.
Yeah,
when and then got himself sent off later on, overhead kick from a centre half, which is fairly unusual. But yeah, it's a long time since we beat them. They're, I mean, one of these teams that have kind of spent a lot of time in the Premier League. But at the moment, we fancy ourselves wherever we go, don't we? I think so.
Where we're playing. I think so. What do you think, Kieran? I mean, the way they're playing at the moment, they've taken to the league like ducks to water, haven't they?
Yeah, it shocked me. Like I said, probably Ipswich, Newcastle and Chesterfield, they want me still in hospital, because when I was in hospital, everyone was top of the league and flying and getting Champions League wins. And luckily, I've got all the links and the streams, and I was watching all the games, and testament to the players, testament to Kieran McKenna. Obviously, was fortunate enough to go to the Plymouth game. I thought Plymouth were probably the better team on the day. But they're doing extremely well, because when I watch the game now, I don't just watch the game as a fan. I watch and I kind of see what players can go on to the next level. Leif Davies, for me, will be a Premier League player. Hopefully with Ipswich. If not with Ipswich, he will definitely play in the Premier League. And I see Broadhead, very intelligent. I worry about his athleticism in the top league, but I do think he can play in the Premier League at certain clubs. And the rest of the team are just going above and beyond. I think they're Championship players, but they're playing really well. And like I said, testament to them and testament to Kieran.
Fingers crossed they'll step up to the Premier League. I've got them as top two finish. That was my prediction at the beginning of the season. I see nothing to change that, do you?
Okay, we've had enough of that.
Top two, I said.
He keeps mentioning that, doesn't he?
He does. He does. But what about Kieran McKenna? Do you think he could manage in the top flight?
One thing, before we talk about Kieran McKenna as a coach, just want to talk about Kieran McKenna as a gentleman. He wanted to come to the hospital to see me. And I've only known him a month. I was only at Ipswich for a month with him. And I just think that speaks testament to the man. He was on that Brian Klug every day. Can I go see Kieran at hospital? Can I go see Kieran at hospital? Obviously, because I knew I was so weak and I'd probably be asleep by the time he come up, I declined his offer. And it wasn't for PR. It wasn't for, no one would have known. It was just for him to come and see if I was doing all right. And I just thought, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's the measure that's of amazing. The man, isn't it? It really is. Amazing.
And as a coach, listen, if Mourinho's take you and as part of your part of your staff, you must know football. And for what he's done and the team, even his recruitment, the way he recruits, it's not just about technical ability. You see all the players we sign now, they can run, they're powerful, they're strong. George Hurst, for example, a lot of people say, well, he's not a prolific goal scorer. When Pep Guardiola goes into Man City, he's not having Aguero. Aguero scores goals for fun, but because he's not there pressing, it's all about pressing and running now. And listen, George Hurst, he's not going to score 20 goals a season, but the way he runs and presses and harries defenders, that's why the Connor Chaplin scores goals. That's why we've got goal scorers all over the pitch. And again, that's testament to the recruitment and the manager.
Well, we're all very pleased he's here, aren't we? And long may he stay, because we've been starved of success for such a long time, haven't we? It's really great to see. Let's talk about you. I mean, where do we start? How did you arrive at Ipswich Town? I mean, you grew up in the shadow of Portman Road, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I was the street before Jason Dazelle, so Jason Dazelle always used to give it that.
He did mention that when he was on the show. Yeah.
So I beat him at that as well. So, yeah, it was Tony Dable. It was Alvin King, who used to work for the Evening Star. He had contacts at Ipswich, and I used to play with his son at St Matthew's School. And he told Tony Dable to come and watch. And he come and watched me as a 10-year-old. And I scored a goal where I actually got it from our goalkeeper, dribbled through the whole pitch and scored. So it was a good day for him to come. And yeah, he told me to come to the Centre of Excellence, as it was called then. We used to train in the upstairs gym once a week only. We didn't play games at that age because we were too young. We only started playing games when we were under 14. They guaranteed me a YTS. So Tony Dable had spoke to John Lowe. I was guaranteed a YTS. Then John Lowe gets sacked. George Burley comes in and says, that guaranteed YTS, no chance. So I didn't like George Burley at the time, and I had to prove myself again. So, but yeah, There was a spell when I was probably 14 where everyone starts growing and growing, and it looks like I'm shrinking and shrinking, and I'm only 4 foot, and some games used to bypass me just because of the physicality. But by the time I was 15, I knew I was going to make it for Ipswich, and luckily I did.
Hometown club, what a feeling.
Yeah, like I said, probably one of the best feelings I ever had was that I was a local boy playing for my country at my home ground. When we came to Portman Road and I came on at half time and we had a great performance, we won 4-2. I actually scored a goal and I was onside and it got disallowed. So that would have been the cherry on top. Where was VAR when we needed it, eh?
Yeah, that's a whole show on its own right. I think we'll skip that bit. Who were the players around? Who were the big names when you arrived at town? Then who did you look up to?
So when I was like I said, a kid in the schoolboy program, Mick Stockwell used to come to train us. Paul Goddard used to come and train us. They used to come, and obviously they had aspirations of being a coach at the time. So I really liked them. Obviously Jason Dazelle was my hero. Him and John Barnes were my two heroes because he played for Ipswich. But when I started getting into the team, there's the story I mentioned in my book, because I was doing so well against the first team, there was some kind of bullying and someone actually took a number two in his slip and made me clean it up. And so I was thinking, I don't want to train with the first team if it's going to be that brutal. But I thought I was better than all the first team. Honestly, I was mad. I just thought me and Richard Wright were the best players in the team. And yeah, I wasn't envious or I just thought, yeah.
Confidence was high. Yeah. Did you ever watch these two when you were growing up?
Oh, way too old for me, them two.
Black and white.
I did the first real World Cup was the 1990 World Cup. So Terry and all this headband stuff, trying to be a hero and stuff. I'm like, just go and get off the pitch and clean that blood away, will you? But yeah. Nah.
See, the thing is now, he's very competitive, Kieran. Extremely competitive. And we'll call him a topper, really, because you know the toppers top what people say. So if you say I've got like a beautiful house, Kieran will say, well, I've got three houses and they're all beautiful as well. Things like this. And whatever he says, he does like this.
You've been to Tenerife, I've been to 11 Reef.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah. That's very good for you, Russell. That's very good for you.
Thank you.
But he's got, and now with the, I'm done completely now with that scar. I'm just absolutely beaten to a pulp now, really.
Yeah, talking as well, not many people know. So we played, it was the Southern Junior Floodlit Cup or something, and we played Bristol City as a youth team player. And I went to play, we battered Bristol City, and Russell was part of the staff. And after the game, Paul Goddard calls me with Russell and says that you're going to be selected for the next England under 18 squad. It was the first time I got called up for England under 18s, and Russell was my coach and a very good coach at that.
Yeah,
and I remember we played, my first game was at Gig Lane at Bury, and we played Scotland and we won about 4 or 5-1, and we had Michael Owen, myself.
You had a good squad.
Had
Rio.
A good team, yeah. Rio
was in the
Emil
squad.
Emil Heskey, Richard Wright, we had a really good squad and a really, really good coach.
And the manager was Dave Burnside.
Yeah.
Dave Burnside used to play West Brom. Yeah. He was like a left-footed winger and he used to run up and down the line juggling the ball all the time. And that's how he thought, you know, the youth team at Bristol City used to play. And that's how we coach them. And we'd go and line up against Wimbledon. And after half an hour, like, we're 4-0 down because Wimbledon have battered us. And Dave's wanting us to pass it all nice and neatly. And he's now going apoplectic. Because he hasn't got a plan B, you know, and I think even in this day and age, you still need a plan B now and again, because if you're up against it physically, you've got to get yourself back in the game somehow. But Dave Burnside was, he didn't let you do any shooting practice either, did he?
No, never. No,
Michael Owen.
Yeah, I know.
He's in the squad. And Michael's saying, can we just finish the session with like 20 minutes finishing some shooting practice? Nope. Well done, like.
Oh well,
strange man.
didn't harm Michael Owen, did it? Really?
No, not really. Yeah. Not
and
really.
That's when Michael Owen was Michael Owen at the young ages. Yeah. I've never. You had to see it to believe it.
How he was quick just, was he off he the was mark? Just,
I thought I was quick. He was on a different planet. That Michael Owen before that hamstring injury was incredible. I was picking him in my best 11 and people go, but you had Shearer. But I never really played with Shearer in his prime. Even though I played with him for so many years at Newcastle, I say prime Shearer was in the Euro 96, 97 season, around that time. Obviously, I got to Newcastle late 90s, 2000s. But Michael Owen, for them, when I played for him for England, for them 2 years, he was just, I've never seen anything like it.
Shearer was a good centre-forward, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I played with him at Southampton when he made his debut.
Yeah,
he
was incredible.
Oof, what a player he turned out to be.
Was he all right as a teammate? Was he all right off the pitch?
What can I say about Alan? Alan's one of them. We could lose 3-2, and he scored two, and he goes in front of the camera and says, my two goals don't count for nothing, and it's all about, but really, he's absolutely buzzing that he scored. But I say that about all the great players. All the great players I play with, they are really, really selfish, really, really driven. But that's what makes them so great. And he was really great.
I think that's where we went wrong, Russell.
Played at the wrong end of the pitch, mate. We did.
What about your time at Town? Tell us about your debut and how you progressed through. What were those years like for you?
I recently did a documentary, and one of the questions at the end was, they said, what was the best time of your career? And I think my best football I played was obviously at Newcastle, but the best time of my career was at Ipswich, because everything was so innocent. No pressure, hometown club, don't have to deal with money, fame, jealousy, media. That was the best time ever, and I just can't believe that. I suffered three playoff losses, featured in all of them. Didn't even get to Wembley. And then the season I bloody go, they go and get promoted. still pains me to this day that I didn't play in the Premier
League. You take the credit for that, don't you?
Of course.
You
got Marcus Stewart because of me. You got John McGrill.
Jermaine Wright.
Roysa. You got some good players.
Thank you, Kieran. Give him a round of applause for that. Look,
but you came so close.
He took one for the team.
Yeah.
But the previous, would you say that's one of the best things you ever did was leave Ipswich? So and they got to the final. So
100%. Listen, like I said, I tried three times and weren't quite good enough. And I always say, one great player can't beat four good players on the pitch, can they? So they got four good players, very good players, and they lost the great player. So I do the maths.
So you put in a transfer request to go?
No. There was a lot of... I fell out with David Sheepshanks and George Burley. I just said that. Obviously, I knew there was a lot of interest going to go on in the summer. And I just said, look, if there's Premier League interest, I would like to be kept informed and like to speak to these clubs. Then it got all messy that when I left, they said I asked for a transfer request. We had to go to a tribunal. I won the tribunal where they said I didn't ask for a transfer request. Then I was going to get banned from Portman Road. And it got really messy, and it was something I didn't like in the end. So I just said, don't worry about the money. I want to come to Portman Road. Let's squash it. And it got resolved in the end. But yeah. Me and Richard Wright, but I can remember in the summer we just lost the Bolton, and we had a meeting with Burley and Sheepshanks, and we just said we want to be kept informed of what's going on. Yeah, and I thought I was going to Arsenal. Arsenal were at every game. Arsene Wenger used to send Steve Rowley, and when I got summoned to the manager's office in pre-season, George Burley just said, we've accepted a bid for $6.5 million for Newcastle. You need to go and meet your agent at Stansted and go up there and sign. And I was like, it was just so surreal. Didn't have time to process anything. Got in my car, drove straight to the thing. I was thinking, Newcastle? And then my agent told me the terms, and I was like, oh, we better go and sign then. But if I'd had the experience I had now, and it's not disrespect to Newcastle, because I had an unbelievable time at Newcastle and got so much out of it, but... I could have been part of the Arsene Wenger and the Invincible team in the early 2000s and that. So I would have just said to the manager, I'll hold tight and see if any other clubs come in. Because in that summer when I was on holiday, the amount of managers were ringing me in the summer was tapping up. Bloody hell, they don't care. I had Ruud Gullit ring me up. I had Harry Redknapp ring me up. I had David O'Leary, who was Leeds manager, ring me up, all telling me that come and sign for their club. So, yeah.
Didn't Juventus show interest in you?
Yeah,
at the time
they did. So Juventus used to watch me when I played at Ipswich, and then when I signed for Newcastle, we weren't doing so great in the first year with Ruud Gullit, and Bobby comes in. There was massive speculation that Juventus wanted me and Del Piero come out and did a big article and said I should join them, and what a great player I was. And I was thinking, Del Piero knows who I am. It's mad.
Was it really Del Piero or not? Somebody kidding on.
Trust me, it was Del Piero.
It wasn't one of the lads, no.
Yeah.
It was Zinedine Zidane again. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Wow, he throws some names in here, doesn't he?
It's like, that's great. I mean, it's fantastic.
He's even topped me with the fee as well, if I want to say.
Yeah, but your fee, if you take inflation into it, you'll probably be a £150 million player now, Terry.
No, I don't think so.
I do.
I'm too old, but there we are. I'm 64, Kieran, so yeah.
I'm going to talk about Norwich City.
By the way, again, I'm an Ipswich boy. I don't like Norwich. So when I woke up from the operation, 3 or 4 days later, I get a call from Chesterfield. Oh, there's a hamper just arrived. Massive, massive hamper. So I'm like, well, I'm not in any fit state to come to Chester. Just open it up and tell me what it says. And Norwich had sent me a hamper, proper all chocolate sweets, and just said, hope that you get well soon. And listen, I thought that was a real nice touch. But yeah, I still don't really like it.
Were the chocolates in date or out of date?
You can test them out.
There wasn't the turkey in there, was there?
Coleman's mustards.
Yeah, and all that sort of.
I was going through all my stuff at home today, and I've got loads of programs and stuff, as you know, and I found this one with you on the front cover. You can see that there. There's Kieran on the front cover of this one. Ipswich Town versus Norwich City. You can do better than that. They're terrible. They got him a hamper, but come on. 21st of February, 1998.
How much for a programme?
A programme was... Oh, good question. I'll have to come back to you on that.
3 and 6.
2 and 6, probably. It doesn't say on the front anywhere. Maybe they were free in those days. What do you remember that game?
5-0.
Yay.
5-0.
Who was there?
Yay. Yeah, what a game. Bobby Petter on absolute fire. Alex Maffey, hat trick before in the first half. Yeah, they were giving it. Biggins before the game, Mr. Edey and that, and we were on such a run there. And we absolutely smashed them.
£1.80. Yep. Sponsored by Guardian Royal Exchange. Ipswich boy, you know just how important it is, don't you? All your life you've known how important those matches are, and there's one coming up. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's just, like I said, all my family and friends, I can't get away with it. I think Scully was talking about how difficult he found at Ipswich sometimes, because it weren't just about the result. He'd have to go home and see it in pubs or restaurants. He was always around it. And that was the case, and I kind of thrived on that kind of pressure, and I just knew we were better than Norwich, and Darren Eady was getting loads of plaudits at the time. But again, me, Scully, Jono, Richard Wright, we'd been in England under 21s with them. He was quick with no brain, so he didn't scare me.
Team,
so
Richard Wright, Mick Stockwell, Jamie Clapham, Kieran Dyer, Tony Mowbray, Jason Cundy, Gus Ullenbeek, Matt Holland, David Johnson, Alex Matthew, Danny Sonner. What was Danny like to go out on a night with?
I never went out with a night out with Danny. I was too young. I remember when, I got called up into the first team, my first pre-season tour, and we used to go to Finland and that. And I was only 17 at the time, and we had a night out, and I went in the nightclub, and George and Dale Roberts were at the bar. They sent me home. You're too young. So the whole team was out, and I was the only one back in the hotel. But you know, I was a cheeky little chap there, and I soon snuck back out and to a different nightclub on my own and summoned David Johnson. So I still had a night out.
Tell us about some of those fun times that you had at the town, because it, as you say, hometown club, but it must have been nice at times.
What was quite weird was that we had so many senior players, but us young players kind of run the changing room. It was weird. Like, we got to decide what music was going on before the games, and it was just...
What did you choose?
It was garage and stuff like that, and R&B and hip hop. Yeah. Me and
I remember
Johnson.
On a certain radio station I used to work at. I'd get a little text message now and again from one Kieran Dyer saying, "What rubbish is this?"
That's why I never went on your show that often. But yeah, and what is a game that was quite unique is that you always used to have older versus young, and olds should usually beat the youngsters, but we used to absolutely batter them. And then when we signed Jim Magilton, you know how competitive Jim is. And Jim, I hear all this stuff that when Jim come in, the level of training raised and how he was so demanding and that. We used to batter Jim all the time. So he used to take out on Matty Holland or someone and say, he used to deflect and we're just, yeah.
Who chose the music in your day then, boys? And what was it in your day?
Paul Marino must have definitely picked your music.
Yeah, I think it was Maras, really. Yeah. I remember coming back on the bus. And Irvin Gurnon, remember Irvin? He put a tape on, and it was Shalimar.
A tape for younger viewers.
Yeah, it was a tape, and he put Shalimar on. And anybody knows Shalimar, it's quite disco and all that sort of thing. So I went down the front of the bus, pressed the button, it came out, opened the skylight, threw it out the window.
So it's funny, I remember somebody doing that in my car one day as well.
Was it Shalimar we were listening to?
No, but what my wife picked us up from a pub somewhere one night, rather late. You had to sit in the front because of your long legs and everything like that. She put the music on, you press your eject button, and it went straight out the sunroof.
Yeah. I'm a tough judge, I must say. I really am. Yeah, I didn't really appreciate that music.
Of course, now everybody's got their own personal headphones, haven't they?
Yep.
Yeah, very different now.
Beats and AirPods and
Do you think that helps the players having that? You know, when they go on the bus and all that sort of thing, and they have all the headphones on, they detach themselves from the rest. You know, toward when they go into games and all that sort of thing.
I liked it. I liked doing it. I liked having certain music to hype me up and.
So you were very antisocial then.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you two working together then? Because obviously you worked together 21s or 23s was at the time, wasn't it? How did you two get on? You didn't really know one another before you started working together, did you?
He was working with Nashy before me, weren't you? And then I got offered the 23s and I was blown away. We were the dream team. We were the only team in at Ipswich Town that were actually winning at the time. So
that wasn't anything to be proud of in those days.
Yeah. Oh, it was. Believe me, it was. When it came to lunch and everything, it was great.
Yeah, yeah. We just hit it off. We were the kids. Like I spoke to Twander the other day, and he said, sends his regards. I said I was coming on. He said, "I tell Terry I love him," and he still sends his regards. And
he didn't love me a few times. Oh, I must admit, but
the time when we lost to Sheffield United. One thing with Terry. Terry's about standards, and we used to have to beg Terry to, like, after game, to just leave the kit alone. The players would do it. Terry would have, like, bag of balls over this shoulder, wheeling out the skips and everything. And, like, he's a 60... How old were you, Sam? 64? 64-year-old man doing all this. And players just sitting on their lazy backsides. And there was one time we lost to Sheffield United. It was a really important game at the end of the season. And Terry was doing all the work again. And they were being little... I don't know if you can swear, little whatever they were. And then Terry just lost it. I was like, I've heard some hair dryers in my time, but that was just like, even I was like, whoa.
I think that was my last game. No, actually, it was my last game. It was my last game. Well, I was fed up. And I used to say, turn the socks inside out so they're clean, so the ladies in the washing area can wash them properly and all that sort of thing. So that lasted about 40 minutes and that was it. It never happened after that.
Did you vent?
I did vent, yeah. I threw a few pair of socks. But no, but he was great. The training that he put on, like with Russell and things like that, great coaches, but they mean it. They're from the heart. And they put the training sessions on to improve the players physically, but also tactically. But then it got to the first team. The first team wanted to be out of the first team squad members who weren't playing wanted to come and play for the 23s and be at Kieran's training because they got them fitter because they weren't fit enough in the first team, which at the time was how it was.
And we used to dread the first team players coming to play in our under 23s, weren't we? We were like, we're going to lose today because we got an unfit player who's just going to be like...
Yeah, blowing a gasket after an hour. And they did.
Yeah.
They came in and they were... and it was like, get the board up and take them off. It was sad. It was very sad. And it was awful to witness that from the inside of the club that we love and how the standards had dropped.
Yeah, well, thank goodness things have turned around. Kieran, we've got some questions for you from our socials in a little while, but we've got lots to squeeze in on the show, so have a bit of a break now. It is time, though, for our Keepy Uppy Challenge, sponsored by Ginger Pickle. Now, you're carrying a bit of a scar, aren't you?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I would love to be top of that leaderboard. I'm absolutely gutted. I'm so gutted. But, yeah, because of the constant on my scar.
No, we understand that completely. Scoey, though, 79, he got bored.
Yeah.
He really got bored. I don't know if you saw it. He got bored just doing the keep me up on one foot, didn't he?
Yeah.
One foot on the right foot. Can I ask you?
I will come back.
Thank you. 100%. Thank you. Give him a round of applause for that. Through the Keep the Uppy Challenge, sponsored by Ginger Pickle.
I'm bringing my own ball and my boots.
Why am I not surprised? Anyway, if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe the channel. And next week, we've got our fantastic night at the Venue 16 Willow Suite, where we're doing this show on the big stage. Steve McCall's our guest next week. And then we've got two-course Christmas dinner, and then we've got a question of sport, Butcher's Bandages versus Escape from Osman. So who's in your team, Terry?
Steve McCall.
Yep.
And George Burley.
And on yours, Russ?
I have Ian Westlake and former captain of Ipswich Town Football Club, Luke Chambers.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a fairly competitive evening, I think.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, without a doubt.
My money's on Russell's team.
It's amazing how quickly you can go off people.
Don't make him laugh, it hurts.
Who's got tickets? Some of you haven't bought them yet, but you can get them. Seriously, there are only a handful left. There really are. Lifesapitch.tv, www.lifesapitch.tv to get your tickets. That's next Thursday. You can also get shirts and mugs like this on there. Plenty of merch, nice Christmas presents for people. All of those on the website, www.lifesapitch.tv. So we'd love to see you there next week. And it's time now for Town News in Brief, sponsored by John Keeble Cars of Bramford with Phil Hamm from twtd.co.uk. Put your hat on, come on.
Hey. That monitor's there. Can you tell that my monitor's there? Because every time it starts, I'm looking over there, aren't I?
Don't give our trade secrets away that you've got monitors.
Sorry, no. It's really coming back to the main news, really, sort of the weekend, is we've sort of covered a bit. It's Kieran McKenna's 100th game in charge of Town at West Brom on Saturday. Took charge in December 2021, and in 99 matches in charge so far, Town have won 58, drawn 27, and lost only 14, which is extraordinary. Win percentage of 58.59, which higher than anyone else in Town history, which remarkable statistics. And we're sort of every week talking about a record-breaking run of one type or another. I think we're unbeaten away in 15 matches or 14 matches at the moment, or 15 at the weekend away from home, and we've kind of levelled. We scored 63 goals in 19 games in 2023 at home, which is a new record for home goals in a calendar year, it's equaled a record established in 56 and 57, but we've still got five home matches to go this year. So that does show quite how extraordinary it's been, really. Remarkable period, and 100 games. Kieran was saying at his press conference today what a kind of honour it is to manage the club for just one game, let alone 100. And I think he's proved to be a remarkable appointment, really, hasn't he?
Any worries about injuries or anything this weekend?
No, pretty much everyone's fit. Wes Burns obviously had that shoulder thing and played 30 minutes in the game against Swansea and has trained for the last 2 weeks. Brandon Williams had been ill. He's back. And no one on international duty managed to get themselves an injury unlike last time. So, all good, I think.
Fantastic. And Kieran, a busy period coming up, isn't it, really, for Town? It's a lot of games coming thick and fast in December. Yeah. Are they up to it, do you think?
December's the big test. Obviously, Leicester, the Derby, some big games coming up. I think after December, we'll know where we really stand. I think the gap we've built up, even if we don't make it automatically, we're definitely going to be in the playoffs. And then with our home support and our away form, then we're going to be a match for anyone, even if it is a Leeds or a Southampton or one of the bigger teams. We've already proved against Southampton away that we can match them. So even Leeds, I watched the game from my hospital room, and even Leeds, I thought we were the better team on the day as well. They've just got some serious firepower.
Yeah, this is what you were talking about before the show, about teams having better players, and they will come out on top, regardless of how good the manager is.
Yeah. Again, like I said, I can't speak highly enough with Kieran, and I think in the Championship, coaching does give a lot to the players, and I think Vinny Kompany showed that last season with Burnley. When you go in the Premier League, the coaches are all at top level, and it is all about players. Players win your games at the end of the day. We can talk tactics, and I think they say as a coach you can help a team or individuals by like 3 to 5%, and the rest 95% is all about players. So Kieran's shown how tactically astute he is, and we've got some good players. And like I said, I do think Leeds and Southampton are going to come charging. As if, can we hang on? And our form suggests that we can at the moment. Yeah, so let's long hope so. Continue.
Let's hope so. Thanks, Phil. We're going to go back in history now, Russ. It's time to have a look at what's happened to ITFC on this day. Brought to you in association with Fred Olsen Logistics.
Right, we're now looking at Wednesday, the 23rd of November, 1892.
Who was there?
Do you remember that game, Terry?
I remember it well.
Yeah. Royal Arsenal, soon to be elected to the Football League, visited Portman Road and easily won 5-0. Their inside left, Elliot, became the first man to be sent off at Portman Road after being cautioned twice for holding. It doesn't say what he was holding, but he got sent off for it. Saturday, the 23rd of November, 1968, a half-time rocket from departing boss Bill McGarry fired up town and inspired a fight back, which saw the team salvage a 2-2 draw with West Ham United in a Division 1 clash at Portman Road. More to come. Tuesday, the 23rd of November, 1976. Your favourite manager, George Burley, scored the first of his 11 town goals in a 3-1 drubbing of Sunderland. Burley, who was to make exactly 500 appearances for Ipswich, was an adventurous defender who successfully marked George Best on his town debut at Old Trafford as a 17-year-old. He later managed town to a fifth-place finish in the Premiership and became Scotland manager in January 2008. And the last one from Wednesday, the 23rd of November, this time 1977, town crushed Spanish giants Barcelona. I think I remember that game. 3-0 Portman Road in the UEFA Cup third round first leg. Johan Cruyff hardly got a kick as Blues built up their hefty lead through Gates, Weimark and Talbot on one of the greatest nights in town's history. I think Roger Osborne did a man-to-man job on Johan Cruyff that night,
didn't
he?
Yeah, we spoke about that on the show a few weeks ago, and he would have followed him to the toilet, wouldn't he, if he needed to that night.
That is it from Dan Botton, and Dan has a new book coming out, I think, in the new year. So fantastic. Let's look forward to that.
Excellent. I think that match against Barcelona deserves a round of applause, doesn't it? Come on. Terry.
Can I just say that on this day in 1993, I was sacked by Sunderland. A lot did happen on that day.
Perhaps that's in Dan's new book.
Well, it's not in my book, I tell you that.
We've got to say hi to Pete, who's watching in New Zealand, everybody. Give Pete a shout. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Pete.
Lots of people watch the show around the world, which is fantastic. Brad's here from Glory Days Artwork. Where are you, Brad? Brad's got a gift for us, and he's going to come right up to that microphone here for us. And, boys, you'll appreciate this. Brad, just get right up close to that microphone.
All right, guys.
Who have you got there?
Great to be here. This is an illustration I did of Paul Mariner, which was used on the official match day programme cover when we played Plymouth a few years ago. And I've noticed you haven't got a picture of Paul up in here. And I thought I'd give this to you as a gift because I think he deserves a spot up.
Fantastic. He does indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad. Let me come and get that from you. Wonderful stuff. That's great. Look
Thank
at that.
Thank you.
It's a really good likeness, isn't it? Isn't that fantastic?
It makes him look handsome, doesn't it? Yeah.
He'll go up behind me over here, I think.
That's the quietest I've ever seen him, to be honest. But Brad's drawings and sketches are fantastic. Anybody want go
through
amazing. His portfolio is just remarkable.
Glory days artwork. Questions for Kieran. We've got one here, haven't we? Go up to the microphone. Question for Kieran. Go on.
Hi, Kieran. You brought out a great book. Really enjoyed it. What story can you tell us that didn't make the book that you won't get done, you know, by the legals?
Yeah, we'll just check with the lawyers first on this one, because it took you a while to get it out, didn't it, for various reasons?
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, the lawyers were a bit scared about certain... I can name you the player. I'll name the player. The player that, when I kind of embarrassed him in training and he did the number two in the slip, was Steve Sedgley.
Was it
there
now?
There you go, right, Steve Sedgley. Just a bully. But that was the way it was that day. It toughened you up and, I definitely got the better of him in training that day. But after that, I never got the better of him again. I just let him get the better of me kind of thing.
So there was a lot of that going on, wasn't there, in
Yeah, that's just the way, again.
What, doing number twos into socks.
Yeah, it was just...
It's a tough environment, isn't it?
Yeah. Trevor Curtin, bless him, he used to check all the jobs and that, and if your jobs weren't done properly and that, And
I thought you were going to say he checked all the jobbies.
And because I was the cocky little one, George Burley used to make me do all the jobs. I had to do the away dressing room. I had to make sure all the balls were pumped up for the first team, the youth team, the reserve team, make sure all their bibs were out, make sure all their cones were out. Then after training, I had to go and fetch them all in, make sure every single ball would come back in. Then I had to clean the balls. I had a lot of jobs, but fortunately for me, I made my pro when I was 17. And then once you sign a pro contract, you just stop all the jobs. Yeah. So then when someone got my job, I was booting all the balls away. Go and get them. So, yeah.
Annette's been in touch. What was the best advice you were given when you were a player?
Probably the best advice I got was, it was pretty straightforward. It was at the time when Graham Souness came in to sort the Brat Pack out, and he came in and he just said, look, when I finished football, I could look at myself in the mirror and say that I couldn't have got any more out of my career. And he said, can you? And I just had to laugh and just said, no. I'd been cutting corners. I'd have been enjoying the celebrity lifestyle. And from that day, which was quite ironic, I then got my head down. I was the first into training, last to leave. I stopped eating Big Macs. I started eating healthy food. I did everything right. I started doing yoga. I started doing everything. But I could just never stay fit. So it was just like...
See, there's a lesson to be learned.
Yeah. Drink as many pints as Terry and you'll be all right. Yeah. No,
Big Macs. For us. Yeah, Big Macs. Nina, just glad you're better, says Nina.
Thank you.
Matt, boots in the North Stand. Tell us about boots in the North Stand.
Yeah. Obviously, I knew it could be my last game for Ipswich. Like I said, there was a lot of speculation. There was always scouts. For me and Richard Wright, even David Johnson, even Scully. And I was absolutely gutted at the time when we lost. I scored two, Matt scored two. And in a way, it was like, if this was the time to say goodbye, what a perfect ending if I just put my boots in the North Stand. And that should have been the perfect ending. But like an idiot, I came back on loan when I was injured and that didn't go too well. So it wasn't actually my last game for Town, but in my psyche and deep down, that was my last game for Town.
Yeah, well, those people who were there will remember that very, very clearly. Robert wants to know about Lee Bowyer, but we'll probably skip over that for the lawyer's reason, and we're running out of time.
Have you actually seen it? It was quite good, the incident.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that later, the next one.
We'll do that when we push the red button.
I've done a bit of homework on that.
Gary, greetings from Madrid. If you could have your time again, what would you do differently?
What would I do differently is just, like you said, I just live my life right, sacrifice the celebrity lifestyle, fulfill my potential, And if I'd have fulfilled my potential, then I'd have been mentioned in the same breaths as Rio Ferdinand and Frank Lampard and people like that. Because when I was a kid, when I was we talked about it earlier, when I was in the under-18s and under-21s, Jamie Carragher, when I retired, came out and said I was the best of the best when I was a young player, obviously excluding Michael Owen. So when you're getting that kind of praise from your peers, it was just a shame that I wasted probably some good years there.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? You're a young man, all of a sudden, you know, from Ipswich up to Newcastle with, you know, all of the delights and everything that there are up there. Temptations everywhere.
Yeah, and obviously I was dealing with this sexual abuse, what happened to me as a young kid, and I come from nothing, and I wanted to make sure my friends were looked after and my family were looked after. So even though I didn't fulfil my potential, I still had some career. I played 30 times for England. I played in the Champions League. I played in World Cups. I played in European Championships. So even though I'm being a bit harsh on myself when I say I didn't fulfil my potential, I'm only being truthful, but I had some career. Like, if you asked the majority of the town squad now, would you like Kieran Dyer's career, they'd all snap their hands off, wouldn't they?
Some would probably like the treats in Newcastle as well. what else we got here? Sarah Ann, from a fellow liver transplantee of Addenbrookes, just want to wish you all the very best, as always. And Linda, what person had the most influence on your career? Would it have been Graham Souness then, from what you said? Or
no, Sir Bobby. And Brian Klug.
Yeah.
Brian Klug, from an early age, was probably the most influential coach I had. Give me all the grounding. How he's still at Ipswich now, the amount of money he must have made Ipswich Town Football Club with the players that have come through the youth setup must be approaching nearly 100 million, I'd say. So in the early stage of my career, and then obviously Sir Bobby Craig says it best. He says you weren't a player manager relationship. You're like a father and son. We spoke to each other differently, and people always say, oh, but you let Bobby down. And I always say, yeah, I did let him down with the right wing situation, but I have fallouts with my mum. I have fallouts with my dad who passed away. I've had fallouts with family members. It don't mean that you don't love them and that you don't respect them. You love them. We just had a disagreement. But what a guy he was, and he was so
influential. What did he call you? Did he call you Danny?
He called me Kevin.
Kevin.
Kevin. I don't know where Kevin come from, but yeah, Kevin. But I sometimes thought that was part of his act, you know. Just if he felt there was nerves or something, or there was a big game, to relieve the tension, he'd throw a dodgy name out or something. So
yeah.
He used to call Gary Speed Kevin Sheedy. He thought he was Sheedy from Everton. I'm just like, but yeah. But what a guy. Like I said, I used to go out at Old Trafford thinking I was the best player in the world, and it was just because... Just in the tunnel, the little things he used to whisper in your ear, you used to think...
Phew. He used to whisper in my ear every time he went out the tunnel, and it was, tuck your shirt in.
Like you said...
Well, it clearly worked, Russell, didn't it?
I've told Phil Hamm this story, and I love it, and I can't wait to see Eric Gates. So when I was playing at Newcastle, they used to have a free legend show. They had Malcolm McDonald, who was the Newcastle representative, Eric Gates, Sunderland, and Bernie Slaven. So it was like a radio show. You can imagine Geordie's live and die football. So this was like the main prime time show. And they used to give us so much stick on there. They used to just batter players. And Eric Gates used to just absolutely batter me. And I just come in one day to Bobby and I just said, this Eric Gates is doing my bloody Eddie. Can you have a... And he went, listen, your mole's better than he was, son. And he probably was lying, but for me, that made me feel amazing. I thought, yeah, take that, Eric Gates. I'm better than you.
Well, actually, here he is. Our special guest. We've got to leave it there, but you'll come back, won't you? You will come back because there are so much things to talk about, and we're going to get you to do that Keep It Up challenge as well at some point.
Can we just ask a bit about Chesterfield and also your sort of ambitions in management? Because you talk about it being a new life and also the transplant games.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so... So I always thought I wanted to be a manager. I was close to getting a couple of jobs. I spoke to Terry. Was talking to Terry about maybe coming in and working with me. It didn't happen. I'm quite thankful it didn't happen because I didn't have the emotional intelligence to deal with the people above. And when I've been on all my courses, it's kind of it's kind of educated me how you deal with recruitment team telling you you've got to sign this player. And like, I couldn't used to get my head around how can someone, an analyst on a computer, be telling me who to sign, and like dealing with the Mark Ashtons of the world was very foreign to me. So I just want to be a first team coach at the moment until I get that emotional intelligence. People used to think I left this club. When I left this club, I was really bitter with Ipswich. I love Ipswich. I've never been bitter with Ipswich. I obviously publicised when John McGill was given the caretaker how much that hurt me. It still does hurt me to this day because I feel that I was ahead of him. He was my assistant, and that how he got given the caretaker job baffled me, but I wasn't bitter. And another thing, I used to take everyone's problems to heart. So like when Terry left the club, I used to try and fight Terry's battles, or when there was a problem with Adam Matte and Brian Klug, or if I see any of the staff or people that I cherish going through difficulties, I took that on myself. And I've learned now that I shouldn't have done that. They're grown ass people, if you know what I mean, and they should be fighting their own battles. And at the time, like I said, because Ipswich Town was my club, I was kind of like too emotional about it. I tried to solve everyone's problems. And I did a podcast before I was ill, and I said that even if Ipswich offered me the job of being manager in the time, I'd turn it down. And I really mean that, because I'm too emotionally connected to the club, and it's best to distance yourself from that so you think logically. I'm at Chesterfield. Paul Cook brought me in. He lets me do, well, before I was ill, he let me do all the coaching. We're doing really well. Got a couple of old Ipswich players in Harley Curtis and Dobra and Bailey Clementson. We're top of the league by 8 points, so everything's going well. And
fantastic.
You said to me ages and ages ago about the transplant games.
Sorry?
About the transplant games.
Oh, yeah, the transplant games, yeah. So I look to hopefully be a patron of it. And they have like a kind of like their Olympic games. It's not just like athletics. They have football tournaments. They have thing for people who have had transplants. So I won't be doing any of the long distance races, but if there's like a 10 meter dash in that, I'll definitely participate in that, and hopefully a football tournament. So yeah.
Well, look, it's fantastic to have you here. You will come back. Keep your Upbeat challenges waiting for you. Super Kieran Dyer, everybody. I told you that song would make an appearance, didn't I?
Kevin.
I know when you came on with us, when the beat was alive, he would call you Special K, wouldn't he, when you came into the studio, and he loved you to bits when you came on the show. It was always a special day for him. Let's do this week's Man v Fat results before we say goodbye. So here we go, the results for this week. To lose a few pounds, one. Pork Vale 10. Ooh. Man Titty 2. Far From Athletic 2. Seattle Quarter Pounders 8. LA Galaxy Bar 2. Largentina 3. FC Dynamo Kebab 8. Hardly Athletic 11. FC 20 Stone 11. Some high scoring games. Please congratulate Matt Leake on his 10% loss and Liam McKinder on his 5%. And a few of the guys looking forward to your Christmas meal, Mark, next week, which is an opportunity for me to plug it once more. We'll be at Venue 16 in the Willow Suite for Life's a Pitch TV next week. Special guest Stuart McCall. Steve McCall. I did it on purpose. Got through a whole show. Steve McCall next week.
So Bobby, it's getting a habit, this, Mark, isn't it?
I know. Okay, that was a Bobby. See somebody about this.
But don't worry about it. That's a Bobbyism. Yeah.
Steve McCall next week, and we've got George Burley there, Ian Westlake, Chambo.
Ian Westlake.
You know who I mean. That's it for this week. But buy your tickets. Buy your tickets.
Westlake. Terrible to me. They really are, Kieran. Terrible.
You deserve it.
Thank you very much. I know.
Keep
in touch with our socials as well, Facebook, Insta and X. Don't forget on YouTube, please like and subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything to subscribe, but it makes all the difference to the channel. And don't forget lifesapitch.tv for all of your tickets for next week and your t-shirts and your mugs. Big thank you to our sponsors, DPS Tech. We're also supported by All About Hearing, marketing company Ginger Pickle, Forward Floors, Come Hither Design, the Hudson Group, Sound 4 Pro Audio, Fred Olsen Logistics, John Keeble Cars in Bramford, and the Dove in St Helen Street in Ipswich. Thank you, Capacity Crowd. Yay! We'll see you next week. Up the town, everybody.